The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at an historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laugh as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians on Earth and Abroad. Big shout out to our super producer, Mr. Max Williams.
What?
They call me Ben. We've got Mr. Noel Brown on the horn today as well.
Nanny, boys.
Okay, guys, let's just, I was thinking how to kick this off. This is one we're very excited about. This is going to be a two-parter on the cultural phenomenon. Star Trek, which has changed the world. Now, there are entire podcasts about all sorts of specific things about Star Trek, but being a history show, we love to talk origin stories. And I got to ask you guys, did you have a favorite Star Trek character growing up or franchise? Well,
first of all, I have to say I'm kind of bummed because I thought we were doing the epic two-part Mork and Mindy episode. But Star Trek's cool. Yet. Star Trek's cool. And honestly, there would be no Mork and Mindy if there were no Star Trek, I would posit. I've never been a Trekkie guy. I like it, but I don't know that I'm familiar enough as a fan to have a favorite character. You know what? No. I always just like LeVar Burton as a dude.
Geordi LaForge.
Vis-a-vis Reading Rainbow. So, and I liked his little headgear. I thought it was a cool look. So yeah, Geordi LaForge, FTW.
I do this all the time when I'm recording. By myself, I like to pretend I'm either Cyclops or Geordi LaForge. Yep.
Ben is placing his headphones down around his eyes like some sort of Star Trek-y visor.
It looks great. And thank you for the visual note. So I would say of the three of us, Max, you were probably the biggest Trekkie. You're also a research associate for this series. Personally, growing up, Captain Kirk always reminded me of my dad for several reasons. I always thought Data was super cool. And then when Next Generation came out, you know, I remember freaking out because there was a Klingon on the crew, you know, but as we'll see, that's almost meta progressiveness in the world of Star Trek, which actually had a lot of real life progressiveness here. This show, Star Trek, Not Ridiculous History, debuted on September 8th, 1966. And to your point, Noel, which I really enjoy, you can't look at the legacy it left without acknowledging how many other things came into the world because Star Trek paved the way. Stuff like Futurama, of course, and then, you know, countless spinoffs of the original series, but also stuff like Mork and Mindy and Star Trek podcast and some big wins for civil rights, which some people might not have seen coming. But how would we loosely describe Star Trek to someone who had never heard of it before? They knew the word Trek, journey. They knew the word star, right? But they had no idea it was a TV show. What would we tell them? What would be our log line for this show?
gentle soap opera in space utopia.
I like it. I like it. It is about a semi-utopian society, right? And the Federation, which spans galaxies, is not out to make a quick buck. They're not out to do resource extraction. They're out to learn more about the universe around them. Pretty cool stuff, but as you know, they manage to get into trouble every episode. And now, as we record in 2023, there are 12 different series. They span over 40 seasons. We're talking 800 episodes. That's not even counting the 13 movies and a pop culture phenomenon, right? There are conferences for Trekkies. There are big and small get-togethers alike. We have several people listening in the crowd today, Ridiculous Historians, who might be in their Trekkie costume.
Actually, since you said that, I'm going to get a little more comfortable over here.
Here we go.
Hair down. Doing this live on the show.
Look at those luscious locks.
Herbal Essence is over here.
There we go.
Oh, okay.
Max has donned his Spock ears. Mm-hmm. And a bit of a Spock wig. Is that sort of a Spock cut?
It's horribly uncomfortable, but I'm going to stick through it the entire episode.
Oh, it's all one piece.
It is.
I see. Is it plastic? It looks a little like those
it's
crinkly,
very rubbery
Halloween
and very
highly conditioned.
Much like Star Trek, like outfits, makeup, and everything, it is horribly uncomfortable. But I will wear it.
Well, can you give us a Vulcan face? I'm going to take a screenshot. This is just for me. Yeah, because they don't smile. Great.
You know, I can only do the Star Trek fingers with one hand. The other one, I can kind of do it, but it's just a little more. It's hard. Yeah, you guys are killing it.
Well, this is actually from Judaism. Leonard Nimoy made this up. This is a blessing when you do it with both hands for a specific type of priest. But this is weird. We're running the weird trivia out first. So, okay, this is the thing you might not recognize, seeing this entertainment juggernaut. You might not be aware, folks, that Star Trek almost never existed. And there's a great article that you found, Max, from Entertainment Weekly in 1993, titled "How Star Trek Almost Died," and it talks about how close the show came to being canceled in the early years, like multiple times, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, usually revolutionary ideas, they don't come easy. You know, people tend to fight them against the status quo, and things like the Grand Old Opry, which, don't get me wrong, is a cultural phenomenon in and of itself, if not like the whitest kind of most vanilla of cultural phenomenons that still exists to this day. But it was a television show, you know, sort of a variety show, and it was very, very, very popular. And in the South and Southwestern states, folks kind of favored the Grand Ole Opry. We're like, what's this Star Trek business? So programmers, station managers, whoever was making these decisions in local markets were very close to ditching Trek entirely in favor of this kind of, you know, scootin' and dootin' country western program.
Yeah, NBC tried to cancel Star Trek three times over its original 78-episode run from September of 66 to June of 1969. And each time, it would have been canceled had the fans not rose up in livid outrage. And it was a critic's darling for a while. It was never, I think the highest it got in the Nielsen ratings was the number 50 spot. It was way behind other popular shows of the day, like Mr. Terrific and the Tammy Grimes Show. And
I reckon you probably never heard of either of those listeners. You know,
I was going to say, that's the funny thing about history. You know, when's the next Tammy Grimes con or Mr. Terrific spinoff? And like you said, people didn't cotton to it with the same enthusiasm in different regions of the U.S. And look, if you are a big studio producer in the 60s, Star Trek is a really wacky idea. Creator Gene Roddenberry pitched it originally as a wagon train to the stars. And he was doing that because when you talk to producers and studio execs, this is a true thing in podcasts as well. You want to try to tie the concept to something that has already been proven to be successful. So he's like, Westerns. You like Westerns? And they're like, yeah, Westerns make a lot of money for us. And he goes, well, this is a Western, but it's in space.
Which is kind of funny because we know what Star Trek became wasn't that. I mean, there were certainly some fights on like desert planets and things like that. But this concept really is not what took off ultimately. But it is kind of what Star Wars is and became. I mean, Star Wars really, in most of its incarnations, is a space Western.
Especially with The Mandalorian, you know. And Star Wars starts in the world of feature film. Star Trek starts as this TV show from this guy who used to be a pilot from Pan Am. He used to work for the LAPD as a press officer. He was a huge nerd who wrote for shows like Dragnet, Have Gun, Will Travel, which is I still think is a great show. That's nostalgia there.
I got to say, too, when I found out that Gene Roddenberry used to work for the LAPD, that's just the most L.A. thing ever. Like, he's working at his, like, LAPD press desk post and being like, you know, so one day I'm going to be a screenwriter, too, in between writing press releases about, you know, whatever police press officers write about. He's working on his pilot. Sarge, you'll see. One day I'm going to be a star.
Yeah, and that's, you know, kind of common in Los Angeles. He says, my series that I'm working on, he's writing scripts for this back in the 50s. He says, it's going to be a mix of anthology sci-fi stuff like Outer Limits or Twilight Zone, but the characters are going to stay the same throughout. So he describes it as a Gulliver's Travel of the future. These are all pulled from things he was saying to studio execs.
So just to take a quick aside, the idea of an anthology series with the same characters, that's more like a Monster of the Week kind of format, right? Like the X-Files, where you have your core cast, but they're, you know, traveling around and doing different adventures every episode, like Scooby-Doo or whatever, right?
Yeah. And one thing that really sticks out about the anthology hybrid approach here is that there's kind of a reset between episodes. So terrible, crazy, sometimes hilarious, Tribble-esque stuff will happen. But then when you get to next week's show, things are back relatively to normal, right? No one's died unless they were wearing a red shirt to establish the stakes of a villain. No one has serious scars that remain with them in the early days. They're kind of self-contained. You don't have to know what happened in episode 8 to dig what happened in episode 9.
Which is a huge plus for studio executives, because it allows you to kind of come in midway and not feel left behind or feel like if you didn't start from the ground floor that you're, you know, going to be completely lost. And we know that model, you know, at least outside of the like era of kind of prestige television, has remained, you know, at least in the idea of sitcoms and more of these X-Files type shows. You know, it's a little harder when you have like a Lost, where if you miss an episode, you will be titularly lost.
Yeah. And also the Lost writers were building the plane while they were flying. So then later
wrote some Star Trek.
Yes. And then went on to mess with Star Trek. Whether you want to say write for or mess with, that's a division amid the fandom.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
You know, Ben, I got to say, one of the best parts about spring cleaning is that post-clean clarity you get where you're like, man, how have I been living like this? What's wrong with me?
You're right, Noel. It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan.
It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month.
To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only.
Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply.
See Mint Mobile for details. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody. Like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So our buddy Gene, who is dreaming big, but maybe doesn't know just how big his dream will become. First, he goes to the suits at CBS, and the suits at CBS sit him down for essentially a 2-hour-long conversation about the nuts and bolts of this Star Trek idea. And then they say, okay, great meeting. Someone will be in touch. And someone was in touch, but not with him. They bought Lost in Space instead. So he goes to NBC, and NBC gives him a chance for a pilot episode. We're getting a lot of this from Richard Zoglin over at Time, who talks about how Star Trek first made it into the screen. So this episode is called The Cage, and this is the one that doesn't have Captain James T. Kirk. It has a guy named Captain Pike, played by a star at the time, Jeffrey Hunter. And Pike is, in this pilot, taken captive on a planet where the indigenous inhabitants want to use him to, quote, breed a new race. The network said, this show is too smart for our audience. It's too cerebral. But we like where your head's at, Gene. So why don't you take a swing at a second pilot? And that's kind of rare, right? Isn't it rare to get to make two pilots?
Oh, yeah. I mean, even, you know, in the much less expensive podcast world, you know, we get a lot of pitches for shows. And if a pilot is rejected, it almost never, you know, is the case. It will be like, well, why don't you give it another shot? And it costs like nothing to make a podcast pilot. So there definitely was some faith in this fellow and his ideas. They just wanted to hone it in and probably broaden it out a little bit. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Same as it ever was, right? And this is where we have to introduce the legendary Lucille Ball, who has some stuff to say about Star Trek.
Lucille Ball was tough. We know, you know, again, like in Hollywood, even to this day, like new ideas are a hard sell until they just blow up. And then they become the thing that everyone else wants to mimic, you know? So Lucille Ball was a funny woman leading a show. And that was not a thing. Women were usually kind of supporting characters to funny men. And they were usually just wives and were kind of like the butt of jokes often, but they weren't the ones making the jokes and getting all the laugh lines. So Lucy was huge, and she was so huge and became such a cultural phenomenon with I Love Lucy. I mean, again, her husband, who, you know, their relationship is famously a little bit rocky at times, but he was definitely kind of second fiddle to her, at least in terms of the show. He was kind of a straight man, even if he had some funny bits here and there, often that kind of capitalized on his nationality and to this day kind of don't age super well and come off as a little bit racist and weird. But it was Lucy who was the power behind the throne, and she and Desi Arnaz, her husband, were so successful that they were able to buy a studio. They bought the former RKO Studios, which is like a legacy, old school studio that made, I think, like a lot of like golden era kind of monster movies and stuff. Or like, what did RKO do? This is Alex Williams' question. I'm sure he's done episodes in Ephemeral about RKO.
RKO did a lot of... I mean, you're right. They date back to the radio days, but they did stuff like Jazz Singer, I want to say.
Mm-hmm. A lot of those Busby Golden Berkeley type, you know, big musical kind of things, I want to say. I think they were responsible for Citizen Kane. And they also birthed a lot of huge stars, you know.
Right.
King Kong is what they did, of course. So RKO is definitely more than just a run-of-the-mill kind of like B studio. They made massive, massive hit films and birthed stars like Katharine Hepburn, Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, Cary Grant had contracts with RKO Pictures. But then they went bust and were, you know, sitting dormant for a while. Lucy and Desi bought the studio, which was actually adjacent to the Paramount lot. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, Star Trek has been a Paramount property since the word go-ish, right? No? Max has given us the hand.
Kind of. We'll leave it at kind of. We'll get
okay,
to it.
Okay, so it's probably one of those Spider-Man versus the Marvel Universe kind of IP things.
Star Trek has been in a situationship, an entanglement, perhaps, with Paramount.
Fair enough.
So we're setting up the story of Lucille Ball and taking over RKO's property to make their company Desilu Productions. Get it? Desi, Lucille.
What do they think? Lucy Des didn't have the same ring. I just think it's funny that the man still gets to lead the little acronym, the little portmanteau.
Every relationship is a country all its own. So Lucille Ball has an eye for talent. She can tell when something might be a hit. So they produce and film series like The Andy Griffith Show, which you will probably remember more so than Mr. Terrific, The Life and Legend of Wyatt Earp, and of course, The Dick Van Dyke Show. After she and Desi break up, she eventually buys her ex's share of the firm, making her not just a powerful star, but the most powerful woman in television. And she is in the catbird seat when NBC rejects Gene's first pilot, The Cage. Lucille Ball, agrees to finance the second project, even though everybody on her board is saying, no, that's crazy. Do you have any idea how expensive it'll be? And she says, yeah. And I'm the most powerful woman in the game of television. So make it so.
I think it's so indeed. Max, would Lost in Space already have been a minor hit at this point since it got picked up and, you know, over Roddenberry's original pitch?
I'm guessing it was probably coming out around the same time, but I
but I don't know. Think it like sci-fi of this degree wasn't like entrenched yet as some sort of massive like cultural phenomenon at in any way. It was still kind of fringy compared to the stuff that the studios knew worked, like those westerns.
Well, Outer Limits was also very much sci-fi still in
that's
play.
True.
You
that's
could say
true.
Twilight Zone. And, Lost in Space is 1965, so they did come out the year previous. But there's a funny Lucille Ball story which to tell. So while she's supporting making this thing, she originally thought Star Trek was about traveling performers working for the USO. You know, the ones who like go out during global conflicts mm-hmm. and do a little vaudeville show. So she was thinking of what would later be, you know, like Star Search or America's Got Talent.
I do want to say this on air because I know somebody's going to be like, well, we're not really sure about that. There are a couple accounts. There's some people who say Lucille Ball was very involved in like the day-to-day of Star Trek. And there's some people who go all the way to the other way and say, oh, she didn't know anything about the show at all. I am going with this report because this is from the guy who brought her Star Trek and was in there like on the day-to-day. And this is what he said, she said. So we're going to go with that.
All right.
Guys, can you imagine? I mean, you know, we know Lucy from her persona as Lucy, you know, as Lucy on McGillicuddy, you know, on I Love Lucy. But I bet, I mean, to be a woman of that stature in such a boys club of Hollywood in this era, she had to have been tough as nails and suffer no fools. And when you look at pictures of her like IRL, you know, and also certain dramatic kind of recreations of her this time, I would be. She comes off as a little bit scary.
Well, you would have to be. I mean, there's probably so much. There's so many traumatic experiences she had to have that just haven't made it into history books. But yeah, she persevered and weathered the storm. And with a force like Lucille Ball on your side, making a second pilot seems a lot less crazy. They recast almost everybody. Actually, the guy who would have played the captain, the guy who played Captain Pike, bows out because he's worried this sci-fi thing will be a fad. Roddenberry cast this this guy from Canada who's kind of an up-and-comer with a lot of experience on stage and screen. His name is William Shatner. He becomes James T. Kirk. And Roddenberry also makes a priority to have this crew be international in terms of their representation. You got a chief engineer who is cartoonishly from Scotland. You've got a helmsman who is definitely from Japan, world-famous George Takei. You've got a communications chief who is African-American. This part, especially in the South, probably ruffled some feathers because these people were working as equals. The only thing that made them unequal was the hierarchy of a ship's crew.
I wouldn't be surprised, too. I mean, if this was a appealing part of the equation to Lucy as well, who had been such a game changer in terms of women's role in Hollywood, both behind and in front of the camera. You know, I mean, I think this was probably something that she maybe, again, I mean, I'm just conjecturing here. I'd love to read her perspective on this. I'm sure it exists, but it would appear that outside of just being a savvy business person who thought that they could have a hit on their hands, that there is some appeal here. And like, let's push this further. You know, let's have something that looks a little different, people that look a little different in a show that also is a little different, but she kind of saw the big picture.
And this was, again, crucial to Genesee's casting. DeForest Kelly plays the doctor. He wants you
Bones?
To...
Bones? They still call him
constantly,
Bones?
Yeah, they do. He's the one who constantly establishes that he's a doctor and not an expert in whatever thing is brought to him at any given point. It's a trope. You know, damn it, Jim. I'm a doctor, not a horticulturist. Damn it, Jim. Even when he doesn't need to, it's just a casual question. They're like, hey, are you going to make it to the cocktail party this space afternoon? He's like, damn it, Jim. I'm a doctor, not a calendar professor. You know, it's, I'm tickling myself here.
Oh, it's a great joke. It's so much that even when DS9 did the fan service letter, Trials and Tribulations episode, they have Dr. Bashir say, I'm a doctor, not a historian.
So Okay, now we get to one of my favorite characters, and I believe one of yours as well, Max. The half-alien member of the crew, Mr. Spock, played by Leonard Nimoy. Spock is incredibly controversial to the studio. NBC really wants to drop him because they say, look, this guy looks kind of satanic. You know, he doesn't have a goatee, but his eyebrows are doing a lot of work. He's got pointy ears. And Roddenberry made this amazing rebuttal. He said, quote, I felt like we couldn't do a space show without at least one person on board who constantly reminded you that you are out in space and in a world of the future.
It just occurred to me that I think maybe his resemblance to founder of the Church of Satan, Anton LaVey, might have had something to do with this idea of him looking satanic, because LaVey was bald and also had mega pointy ears and, you know, kind of sharp pointy features and arched eyebrows, you know, and I believe... Yeah, it was around the 60s or the late 50s that he would have been in the press as a figure of some countercultural kind of controversy, along with folks like Kenneth Anger.
And not to mention Fritz Lieber and so on. 1966, I think, is around the time that LaVey starts doing lectures on the occult. So this, yeah, there's definitely some stuff in the zeitgeist here. NBC decides that this is not the hill they're going to die on. So they let Spock across the pass, but they literally say, you know, kind of keep him in the background. Like, we will let people be reminded they're in space, but we don't want to be in their face about it, essentially.
Yeah, but then once the Spock character, like, just takes off, they're like, Spock it up. Spock up front. Give us more Spock. Let's lean into that Vulcan neck pinch or whatever the hell it's called. Yeah, exactly. Also, just a little bit of silly trivia that I think we've talked about before. There was a phenomenon, cultural phenomenon, that is relatively contemporary, where people in Canada were drawing exactly what Max has on his head. This kind of, like, you know, mm-hmm. bang, kind of straight cut bang thing, and pointy ears and a little bit of a goatee thing, and a hand doing the fingers, the live long and prosper fingers, on their Canadian banknotes, mm-hmm. because the former Prime Minister Wilfrid Laurier looked a lot like Spock, and they call it Spocking. And also the bank apparently was against it because it's, you know, technically defacing money is, like, illegal.
Yes. Yeah. And you can see people doing similar things with Washington on U.S. currency. But this Spock guy is going to be a big deal. NBC is wrong about it. And Max, also, you pointed out that if you look at the first pilot, which still had Leonard Nimoy, and you look at the second pilot, they definitely dialed back that quote unquote satanic look. And maybe they would have treated Nimoy better if they had known that he was going to go on to have an illustrious musical career, thinking of the Ballad of Bilbo Baggins, which I've linked in the chat. I gave you the full album version, so maybe wait till we're off the air.
Also, you know, related to the other show that Ben and I do together, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, Leonard Nimoy became a very famous kind of conspiracy, unsolved mysteries type presenter with In Search Of, you know, starring Leonard Nimoy, famously referenced in the Tenacious D song, referring to Leonard Nimoy kicking out the jams.
And that makes me think we do a Nimoy episode in the future, or just Star Trek music. I actually, it's weird because here's how much of an effect this thing has. A slight sidebar. Doing research for something else, I actually pinged Max looking for scholarly papers from economists about the post-scarcity economy of Star Trek. And Max, I'll follow up with you. I got to tell you this, it's a weird thing. But anyhow, Star Trek. We wouldn't be having any of these conversations if everything hadn't worked out just so.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. on demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's and cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I owned a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com. The first episode that ever hits the network is not the pilot. It's called The Man Trap. The crew encounters a vampire-esque alien, but instead of drinking blood, it drains bodies of salt. This is a Thursday night, September 8th, and the other shows that are on at the time are Bewitched, which is still, you know, kind of iconic, and My Three Sons. People didn't immediately like Star Trek, at least the critics didn't. They said it was confusing, it was too complex, it just didn't work. And ratings were good enough for the show to make it to a second season, but just barely. You know what I mean? It's almost like the first season was a not good enough pilot in itself. So they said, we're going to keep trying.
Yeah, there's a cool quote from Variety. Well, not being cool. It's just, it's a very, summing up the perspective of the time, quote from Variety saying, Star Trek obviously solicits all-out suspension of disbelief, but it won't work. Because of the things that you were saying, even within the sci-fi frame of reference, it was an incredible and dreary mess of confusion and complexities. And that is a criticism that maybe some people today don't get Star Trek might still throw at it. You know, it does have a certain vibe to it that you're either on board with or you're not, because it isn't like really any other show. It kind of sets its own tone. And if it's not for you, if the pacing isn't for you, and if kind of, you know, some of the political undertones aren't for you, then it just might not be your bag, but it is the bag of plenty of folks, as we know, it would eventually become. So apparently this was right around NBC's decision the first time to cancel the show, and this was announced
in the middle of its second season.
Yikes. Yeah.
And a lot of people were upset due to some pragmatic concerns. If a show only runs for two seasons, then it's highly unlikely that the network will bother to air reruns. And so Star Trek would have become an historical footnote. However, fans like sci-fi writer Betty Jo Tremble, also called Bijo, they gather to the cause. Tremble later says, "It really annoyed me, talking about the cancellation. I think we had a moral prerogative, not just to save the show, but to let these networks know the public have an opinion." So she and her husband, John, create a campaign called Save Star Trek. It's this huge letter-writing effort. The fan base that already considers this a cult classic, they're getting all the addresses from fan mail, even Gene Roddenberry, through like a shell of plausible deniability, is chipping in so fans can get free postage stamps. And there's this chain letter that goes around. For anybody who is not old enough to have experienced these, in the days before, your crazy uncle would send you emails that said, forward, 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 Obama says Earth is flat, or whatever. People would send these letters that would say, send a copy of this letter to X amount of people, right? Or, you know, it'll give you instructions. It's meant to go viral. And it gave these letters gave people a step-by-step guide for how to write to the network and what to say. As a result of this, NBC gets more than 110,000 letters, individual letters from fans across the United States. And we still don't know how many letters they got. They may have received many more. At least that's what some former NBC folks say, but officially it's unclear. Is that right, Max?
Yeah. I mean, there is some reporting that say it's in the millions, the number of letters they got, but it's like also from off the record, former NBC employees. So it's like, who actually knows? And there's a lot involving this about Gene Roddenberry maybe doctoring some of this stuff too. So,
because yeah. Gene was a writer, maybe he wrote the protest letter that he had other people copy. That's a conspiracy, but we know the real thing, the letter writing conspiracy or movement, if you want to call it that. Regardless how many actual letters arrived, it did shake NBC because no one had ever tried this at such a large scale as a fan community. And because of this, Tremble is often referred to in the Trekkie community. Trekkies are the fans of Star Trek. She's often referred to as the woman who saved Star Trek. But she says, at the time, people thought she was an idiot. There were other things happening in the world, of course. The women's liberation movement was in the forefront of the news. There were women speaking up. There were people saying this must change. And then concurrently, you know, or simultaneously, there's another group of people led by a woman who are saying, save this weird TV show. So they were questioning priorities. But again, to the conversation about how hard Lucille Ball had to be to succeed in a predatory environment and a misogynistic one, Bijo is managing to do some unprecedented stuff as a female sci-fi fan, you know? she's rallying the little people. And despite that initial media skepticism, it worked. In March, NBC said, okay, we're no longer going to cancel Star Trek. There will be a season 3.
Yeah, you can be the change. Yeah, you wish to see in the world. It can be done, especially, you know, in this time where, you know, we look at, like, you know, change.org petitions as kind of spitting in the wind or whatever. You know, if it can feel a little bit daunting to go up against the powers that be. This is as maybe lower stakes as something like this might seem. It is a great example of somebody being able to single-handedly rally, you know, enough people to get the attention of a much larger entity and make a positive change, because Star Trek was an important cultural institution. It created a lot of changes in the way people perceive characters on television. It gave a lot of opportunities to, because of that multinational kind of angle that we talked about. We're going to get to some specifics in part two about how this was such an important cultural moment and some of the things that were being tackled on Star Trek, whether thematically in episodes or just between the cast, were important. It was important for representation, you know, on television during a time when, like, women's liberation and kind of, you know, let's say civil rights were really starting to be very, very front and center and very important. You know, pop culture can help those kinds of causes. And we have Bijo to thank for that.
Mm-hmm, we really do. But they're not out of the space woods yet, fellow Ridiculous Historians, because the show's budget is dramatically cut in the third season. NBC is practicing what I would call malicious compliance. Roddenberry is no longer, at least at this period, he's not a hands-on showrunner. He's stepping away from the day-to-day stuff. And as a result, a lot of people will tell you the quality of the show declines in the third season. And by the end of season 3, everybody thinks the show is going to be canceled. The fans come back out. Let's get the band back together. Let's reunite the army of the little folk fighting the studio execs. They even march outside of NBC's Burbank studios. It doesn't work. February 1969, the network says, we're going to cancel the series after that final episode runs in June. The final episode, Turnabout Intruder, is, according to our resident Star Trek critic, both very horrible and disgusting. Max is given thumbs downs.
It is the episode that establishes that in the distant future, women cannot become captains, which they spend many, 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 many subsequent seasons and shows undoing, including Voyager, making sure, like, the main character and the captain was a woman. It's like, Ooh. Oh, this woman just goes insane because she could not become a captain. It's like, what?
But okay, so this seems like an ignominious end, right? You remember the iconic opening monologue from Captain Kirk. They talk about a 5-year mission. Now it looks like they're not going to make it to 5 years, but there is a very important victory that Bijo and the fans earned. Since Star Trek got a third season, it had enough episodes to go into syndication. And as we'll see in part two of this series, that is a game changer. For now, I mean, the time has just flown by here, Noel. For now, I think we're going to pause. We're going to go away to, what is it, 10 forward?
10 forward.
We're going to adjourn to 10 forward, chat it up with Guinan, who, according to the lore of Star Trek, must have been alive at the time of the original series. We'll get into that or not get into it at all.
I mean, that might be shown in a Star Trek movie or something. I'm not going to.
Quite possibly, maybe. But for now, want to say thank you, of course, to our super producer, research associate, and resident Spock cosplayer, Mr. Max Williams. Thanks, of course, to Lucille Ball. I bet a lot of folks didn't see that coming. But thank you for I Love Lucy and also Star Trek.
Indeed. And of course, thanks again to you, Max, for doing this incredible research. Really excited to get right into part two post haste. Also, thanks to Christopher Hasiotis here in spirit, Eves Jeffcoats, Jonathan Strickland. Time is nigh, if not past nigh.
Agreed. He is our resident Cardassian. Not Kardashian. Sorry, Strick. I'd also like to thank Alex Williams for making this slap and bop. And Noel, thank you. It looks like we're on our continuing mission to explore history in the most ridiculous way possible, and I couldn't be more excited.
Same here, my friend. We'll see you next time, folks.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.